defining the categories in the Rambam, and not the dates, okay, the Prakim in the Rambam. So you'll notice that at the end of each parak, he has a pasuk here that sort of summarizes the entire parak, as we mentioned last week. I just wanted to define precisely what each parak is, okay? I mean, basically, you said last week, he's wanted to find one more precisely. See, the first parak really is an overview, the mitzvah of perfection, which involves both the psychological and the philosophical. That's the first parak. That's why at the end of that parak he says that he speaks about the fact that we refer to God in anthropomorphic terms. Okay? He says, Kach lomdu b'firish mitzvah zu, it's parak alef alef avav, ma'al nikra chanan afatoa yechanan, etc. Ma'anika kadosh, afatoye kadosh, al-derech zu koron avim lo'chel, b'cholosan ha-kimiyin, erach ha-panyin, v'ab-chesed, tzadik, v'yosho, tonin, v'ibo, chodik, v'chayotze, v'hem. So our reference to God, really, in these terms, is not admissible. Because actually, anyone that believes in literally has no chelik in the whole book, because it's a denial of the Yisrael of the Yud Gimel Ikar, okay? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have any of these traits, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is changeless, and the reason why we use these terms, the Rambam says, is really as a limit for us. The motto of using these terms is, because it says Tzadik V'Yosha, God is Tzadik V'Yosha, what it means is you should be at Tzadik V'Yosha and emulate this midah. But God as a Tzadik V'Yosha is a totally different phenomenon. It's a different kind of a thing altogether. So the terms, the only term for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you can't say more than perfection, that's it. I mean, the ultimate perfection, which we don't even grasp in terms in human terms. But you're permitted to use these terms in order to teach you to emulate Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And really, Rashi says the exact same thing. Because Rashi says twice. He says it by the Zohar HaPlaga, where God says, by Zohar HaPlaga, Vayered Av Hashem Lios HaSehir HaSam Midas. So that's in Nayach. So it's Vayered Av Hashem Nayach. It's a Yud Aleph Hey. Vayered Av Hashem Yeres Hashem Yeres Amigo Shabbanu Bnei Hadom. So Rashi says over there, and then further, Havon Nerdo V'Novlo Havon Nerdo So it means to say that the Torah spoke that way about God in order to impress upon the dying that he must, how he should act. He shouldn't just act quickly, make a quick decision, even though he thinks, he feels that he has the answer, he still has to subject himself to a long process of analysis. He shouldn't rely on his first judgment. Now he knows whether the person is a Rasha or a Tzadik. That's why it says, Vayeirid Ad Hashem Liros or Yirves HaMidol. Same thing you have again in Vayera. Okay, the same thing. Well, that's Erdonov Ve'era, the same thing you have in Gracious Yitches Fafalot, Erdonov Ve'era, Akitzah Koso HaBoi Lai Osu, Kola, Vim Loidah. Rashi says the exact same thing over there. Okay, as a matter of fact, Rashi refers to this other Rashi. Lamed L'dayonim Shelo Yitzhiki Dini Nefashis Ela Buriya. Akol Kamoshi Gerashi, the Parshas Aflada. Okay. So it means to say that a person will remember the Pasuk, and you will think, so to speak, I thought it's Baruch Hu thought into it, Aviyachol, I certainly have to think into it, and I think, oh, by the first thing that appears to my mind, even though I feel convinced at this moment that I know whether the person is a Rasha or Tzadik, I have to override that immediate feeling and conviction and remove it, and analyze carefully. Okay, because it says about a Kodesh Baruch Hu that he analyzed. That's what Rashi says. And the Rambam is saying the exact principle. That all the anthropomorphism in the Torah, the matter for the anthropomorphism is because of the limud that man is supposed to take from the description of the Torah used about God. Okay, so that's the Rambam. So that's the first part. So the first part really is that a person should perfect himself and emulate me to start. But I'm going to explain this what it means. Because man's enemy is the instinctual. The instinctual is that which causes man to think he knows what he doesn't know. And it's the struggle that man has is between the element of being and the instinctual. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaveh Yochel, is the furthest removed from the instinctual. Rams, we call God intellectus, intelligence, source of all intelligence. So it means to say, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't influenced by the instinctual, and man has to, insofar as he is capable, to rise above the forces of the instinctual and go according to his das, according to his self. That's all of the others. Okay. So that's the first part. The second, now, in that process of perfection, the Rambam breaks it down to three components. So there's the first parak, the second parak. That's why the first parak, the second parak, but the first of the three is Rusha Shlomo Amar Palais Magal Raglecha V'Choldu Rachacha Yitom, which means to say a person must study himself and rechannel his energies. That's the first parak. Then the second thing is the objective, person's objective. The objective of an individual must be only one thing, the Bias Hashem. That's why he quotes at the end of the Torah, Gimel, Rusham Hashem B'chachmasa B'choldo Rechecha Da'ir Yashar Hasem. So the first part is the psychological rechanneling of energies that every person is required to do. He must always assess where his energies are going, and he must distribute them according to certain principles of the Yahadis. That's Parak Sheni. In fact, Shlishi discusses what must always be before a person's mind's eye, his objective. There's only one real objective, that's a Bias Hashem. That's a paragraph. And paragraph V, I'm telling you on my chart, what is paragraph V doing in Yarach HaZakar? It's purely the medicine, nutrition. So you see from paragraph V that a Talmud Chacham is Mechuyim to study nutrition. He's been on nutrition, don't turn off. That's why I write the paragraph V. Okay. Parag Hamishi comes back to his theme. Parag Hamishi, he says there is a profile of an image of a perfected individual, of a tzaddik, and that's a psychological tool and something that a person must use. He must always have before his mind's eye a certain image that he is striving to reach. What is that image? That's the image of the tzaddik. That's Parak Hamishi. So he describes the profile of the tzaddik. A person must have before his mind's eye that profile. That's what Shiva Yeshua tzaddik. That's what he says, It means that that's a part of perfection. So really there are three components to perfection. One is the rechanneling of energies, psychological energies. Two is the person must always have a certain objective before he puts himself in an objective, which is the Bias Hashem, the Eye of God. And the third is a psychological tool, which is an image before his mind's eye of a perfected person. And he must always strive to be in line with that image. That's the Rambam, that's the person. Those are the three things first. Now, Parak Shishi and Parak Shavi, yeah. The whole concept of Eretz Yisrael is nothing really, unless it brings to mind those individuals that were instructed to live there, namely Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I mean, that's the whole purpose. Mars and Machpelah, that's the whole purpose. Okay? Yeah, and Kevin Rachel or something else. But anyways, maybe we'll discuss that later. But that's really the whole idea of Mishnatah. By Yeshua ben Nun, the Shtata Chakiv Re'avos, used to say, you're right, I mean, it's a good, call it. You're right. It's a halacha that a person must always have before his mind's eye certain perfected individuals, the image, both in general and also in specific, a certain individual. Then Perek Vav and Perek Zayin is something different. Vav and Zayin really is up till Vav you have man's perfection insofar as he is an individual. And Vav and Zayin you have the man's perfection insofar as he is a social being. Vav is really general, and Zayin is Lashon Hara and Rechius, because that's the specific institution that Yahadus institutionalized those modes of behavior in special lavin and surim and atar. So that's why the Rambam in the end of Ezra's Deus, he says that the Vizui Adeyar Nechono She'efshit She'yitzkayim Bo Yishiv Ha'aretz Ma'asom Ma'atanam Shabnei Adam Zeh in Zeh. That's basically what it says. That's the format of it. Okay, there's of course a lot more to talk about, but that's basically the outline. Yeah. That's right, another thing. Okay, never mind, yeah. All right, yeah. Ram says, Al-Yumna Adam Etzatzmo Elami Dvarim Shasroch HaTorah. A person shouldn't refrain from anything that the Torah didn't prohibit. And that's in Perek Shemish. Yeah, that's right, I'm not, yeah. Right, only you shouldn't refrain from anything other than that which the Torah prohibits you. So a person that imposes upon himself restrictions in terms of physical enjoyments and pleasures, if the Torah didn't answer it, he shouldn't do that. Okay. Yeah, and then he says that the Okay. So yeah, so that's actually, so the question we raised was about the contradiction to what he says in Peregrinshon. Because he says in Peregrinshon, the family in should only desire those things which are impossible to be without. That a person should only work insofar as he needs his temporary needs. It's good for the tzaddik has a little bit. So this would seem pretty restrictive. Sagat the Rambam say in the third parish that anything which a parish didn't answer, you shouldn't refuse yourself. It's just a contradiction. Yeah. But the answer is like this. The answer is because in Perek Gimel, in Perek Gimel, the Rambam's talking about the area of the objective, the human objective. What the Rambam is saying is that there is in man a certain kind of objective that he sets for himself, which is a certain ascetic objective. And man's nature is such that he enjoys asceticism. So a person can, and this is really the difference between Yahadis and between the other religions. And the other religions maintain that perfection comes to man through a certain kind of ascetic personality. See, that's really their objective. The objective is that asceticism per se is considered virtuous. Considered virtuous. This is where somebody says, this individual is a very big tzaddik. Why is very big tzaddik? Because he's very poor, poverty stricken, and he wants his house to see poor he is. This is tzaddik. Okay? We don't know about tzaddik. That objective is really not the objective of Torah. The objective of Torah is only the Yiddish Hashem. And asceticism per se, there's no such thing as a morality which is morality that is not tied to Yiddish Hashem. Just morality per se. A certain kind of moral or ethical asceticism. That's why the Rambam has it in the Rambam. That's the Rambam does. That's the Rambam says that's the Yiddish. the person considers that to be an objective, that's his objective, then which is really the objective instead of other religions, then that is that's us. That's why he says the chacham aser to aser a person to be involved in financing. Because they knew that that's really the area where this emotion is very, very strong. Strongly expressed is in the area of fasting that makes a person feel very righteous and virtuous, and then his objective becomes asceticism. That's us. That's what I'm used by that. That's why he puts it over there. That's what's not happening. Okay. Yeah, that's true. That's why he mentions Nazirus, because that's the area. You see, the Goyim have this type of a thing. The monks and the that's really the danger of Nazirus. Because Nazirus, you could fall into that kind of an emotional framework, a mental framework, and if you do, then you've thwarted the objective of your Yedirus. Once a person does that, then he's on an emotional plane and he has no relationship to the other person. Okay. The first halacha is where the person restricts himself because his objective is Yedirus Hashem. As far as his objective is Yedirus Hashem, so then the restriction has a value. But if it's a self-gratifying kind of moral ethic and asceticism, that's valueless. That's connected to all that. Okay. Now what I want to do today really is finish. I want to do this parsha, of course, is the parsha that begins the Shibur, that Klal Yisrael, the Avdus. The severe Avdus that we lived through as a nation in the very beginning of our history. Okay? So, you know, there's one question that really is never answered, and it's a big gap, and that is, how did the Bnei Yisrael really become involved in the Avdus of the Church? How did it take place? Okay. It's a big gap. Yeah. The Rav one time said that the gaps in the Torah are striking, and it's true. But there is one clause that you can't say about a gap in the Torah, and that is whenever you have a gap in the Torah, it's an indication that the nature of the knowledge that we're seeking is not something that could be portrayed in Parsha Matzav. Because Parsha Matzav has its limitations. Parsha Matzav is on a certain level, it's a certain level of philosophy. But when you get into really abstract thought, then it becomes Parsha Matzav. So the reason why there are gaps in the Torah is, whenever you see a gap in the Torah, that's what I mean. It means that this kind of knowledge could not be presented through the instrument and the tool of Parsha Matzav, because it is abstract and it can only be understood through Parsha Matzav. But if you look carefully, you'll see the answer always has to be, the way to fill in the gap is always through Parsha Matzav, which of course is in Parsha Matzav. But it's a separate instrument. Okay. Now, that's one question. There is a little bit of a hint that we find in Parashat Balaklava with regard to that question as to how the Jews became enslaved. You take a look in the beginning of Vayechi, so it says, Rashi says, first Rashi Vayechi, Rashi says, no more parshas is sooner. Why is this parsha closed? It's not a wide break. So Rashi says that the moment the Yaakovino passed away, so then they began enslaving the Jews. Of course, I mean, that Rashi is against the text. The Torah, the text. Because Yisrael Tzadik was still in position. Okay, he may have been reduced a little bit in stature, but he was still positioned. The Avdus didn't begin at that time. He did not begin at that time. So the Rashi, the way the Rashi explains the Chazal that Rashi's quoting, really is difficult because this is not the case. Let's take a look at the Parshas Shemot. Parshas Shemot, it says, "Vayu bayom emohim, vayu dal Moshe vayu ki alecho, vayabes alosom, at tishnish bezirah." Vayabes alosom, vayarish mitzri maka ishivri meyach. So you saw an Egyptian beating a Jew. Vayifen tovachol, vayarki inish, vayachas amitzri vayimeyabachol. I want to mention, if you got this passage, see, that he didn't really do this till later in life. I mean, where was he when he was younger? So I mentioned that Moshe Rabbeinu was very organized in his own development. And he did not go into politics. He didn't go into politics until he understood exactly the philosophical, the correct philosophical principle. But politics is only really good if the person understands what the good is. See, the question is, good? How do you know what evil is? How do you know what good or evil is unless you really are a great philosopher and a great thinker? First, Moshe Rabbeinu perfected himself in the idea, in knowledge. Then he decided to look into what's going on in the opposite of the average person today. So that's why it says, Vayivdah Moshe Vayitzalecha. Then, after he understood, he attained true knowledge of what virtue really is, and what perfection is, then he was in a position to judge the world. So then he went out, and he decided he's going to make some decisions based upon the political situation. So he saw the issue Matri, and was beating the ring. So it says, when you think of a home, see, it wasn't just overcome by emotion. He carefully assessed the situation, looked around to see if anybody's around. Vayaki Nish, Vayachas and Mitzri, Vayu Nebacha. So he killed him. Yeah. Now, Vayetze Vayam Hashemi, Vinesh Nehanoshim Ibn Mitzri. Vayom Ele Rosh, Aloma Sakareach. Then he saw two Jews are fighting. And he said, why do you hit your friend? So the Jew rejected Moshe's admonition, and he said, "You want to kill me like King of Mitzri?" So Mitzri said, "Ochen no da gavah." Of course, there's an Egyptian Mitzri here, which means that he's still in danger. And then also, Chazal says, it means that he genuinely understood something that he didn't understand. Interesting, very interesting. He understood why they were in slavery. So basically, the answer has to lie right here. This is where the answer is. Because Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'll find out that double. Chazal says, he understood on two levels. One was in terms of his personal safety. He knew that now he's in danger. But also, he understood why the Jews are not. And if you study the situation, you'll see that what happened here, basically the first Jew is being oppressed by the Egyptians. And Moshe Rabbeinu killed the Egyptians. So he killed the Egyptians. Now how did the others, and he checked around, it says, he saw nobody else, nobody was within distance to be able to see the event. So how did the other Jews find out? What's the answer? The answer is, he was Jew. That's an amazing thing. Why? Because, you see, whether that, how, what that Jew did was a terrible terrible sin. Why? Because really what that Jew did was Moshe Rabbeinu placed his life in jeopardy for this Jew. He killed the Jew. Of course, the Jews should not have been settled. Why did he do it? For the same reason, that the other Jew later, the second incident, he applied to Moshe, which means to say And basically, the Jew was a, you might call it today's political term, a liberal. A liberal to the point that they were angry at Moshe because they felt that he had no right here to kill the Egyptians. Basically, he felt, okay, so the Egyptian was really a Jew, but why do you have to kill him? So really, these Jews were standing up for the rights of the Egyptians. An amazing kind of a thing. An amazing kind of thing. What does it mean to say? It means to say that you can have a situation where people are enslaved and they're being treated with the greatest injustice. And yet, psychologically, what they do is they assume the sense of right and wrong of the oppressor. That's an amazing thing. And that's what they did then. The first Jew, I mean, you don't know how the first Jew, in what manner he told, whether he was himself, oh, for whatever it was. He certainly, the mere fact that he told showed that he wasn't going to save Moshe. He wasn't interested in protecting him. Which means he must have felt in some sense that Moshe did the wrong thing, even though he himself was being oppressed. An amazing thing. It reminds me of something that happened in Austria. When the Germans started to move into Austria, the Jews in Austria had a very good life there. But then suddenly a lot of them started to commit suicide. About 100, jumping out of window. At that time, Anna Freud said to her father, she said, look, maybe you should commit suicide. And how did you do that? Look, I did like a thing. I was always doing it. So she said, Freud says, maybe your father. Freud says, why? Because that's what they want us to do? And Freud is very deep psychologist. What Freud was saying is basically is he was defining the emotion of those people who committed suicide. Basically, in some underlying level of their personality, they were conforming to the mentality of the oppressor. Amazing. And that's basically what was happening in the Chinese. The exact same thing as with the incident of Moshe Rabbeinu. That the Jews at that point really assumed in some distorted way the sense of right and wrong of the Egyptians, and therefore they defended the Egyptians against Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, that's pretty open in the Sefer HaMaaseh. So, we might say from this, and we could say extremely about the Jewish people, that somehow or other, in their personality, in the Jewish personality, lies a kind of mentality of others. Mentality of slave mentality. That's what a slave is. A slave really is not just physically and financially dependent. And what's bad about a slave is that he's emotionally and mentally dependent. That's why Yahagas and Yahagas is such a slave because of the way to go. Yahagas is very much against the idea of a slave mentality. That's why the person who wants to Ahavti says he lives in the comfort of his Adon, and he says Ahavti yes Adoni yes Ishti yes Bona lo eche Ahavti, so he eats Adon of El Homohim, and he's a less Adon of Sosno Bona Tzaya. So you see why, Ozi Shishoma Al Hasina, and he's leaving Yisrael of Adon. The year that heard that God says that you are my slaves, and this person wants to become other nationals, this is against the sin. Of course not. There is. Everything is not sin. Is that a slave or anything that's here? The answer is there are individual mitzvahs, of course, but then there are certain things which are categories of perfection. And what the Haggis has isolated means that in order for a person to really be an Oved Hashem, he can't have any traces of obviousness as far as man is concerned. So, if he enjoys the security of the Adam, he subordinates himself to the das of an Adam, then he didn't hear Sinai. Sinai, apparently the message of Sinai didn't get through. It's an interesting thing. It's a very interesting thing. But the reference I mentioned with regard to Avodah Meril Lefad Mitzrayim, the Tzimah Shalakim Yisham, the Rav said that really in the night of Pesach, it's not that we really go free, it's just you exchange your Adon. The Adon is not Paro, but the Adon is God. Okay? And you see the very term, which is what is the term that we use to express, I got to say, in place of the Yitkev up there, Shem Avaya, what do you say? It's Abi. Adon alone. That is the concept. That is the very term, the very name of God that we use most often as Abi. Okay? Why? Because that is the concept. That is the idea. The idea is an interesting concept. It's basically, what the Torah says is that the Jewish personality has a certain trait, which either it could be used, either the person subordinates himself to God, or else, somehow or other, the Jew subordinates himself to God. Very interesting. It's an interesting comment on the psychology of the Jew. Yes. The question, of course, is, where does this trait come from? And where can you trace it any further? I mean, before we go any further, I mean, with this, you can understand what Rashi means in Vayechid. It means to say that it's either or. It means the Jew in personality has an element of subordination to those who oppress him. But there is one way that he escapes. How does he escape that? It's not through psychological strength that he escapes. It's through intellectual strength. Through chok, which means to say, as long as he's bound and tied to chokmah Torah, then he's free. But if he abandons chokmah and just goes on the strength of his personality, he's going to wind up in hell. Interesting comment. Where do you see the Torah really? See the Torah by Rivka. And when Rivka was there, who was she? Said Hashem. So they said, "The Yom Hashem law, Shnei Goyim B'Zeh, Shnei Le'umim Me'ayeti Paredi." Will own the Emos. What does it mean? It means one nation will be stronger than the other. Which one? Doesn't say which one. What does Chazal say? It depends. If the Jew lives according to Derech HaChokhmah Torah, so then it's Yaakov. But if he doesn't, so then on the contrary, he's an Eved to Esau. And the Bracha says the same thing. When Esav said to Yitzchak, he said, "Arocha achas before Yavi, is there anything left?" And what did Yitzchak say? He says, "Vahoya, vahoya kasher toyu, yiforak ta'ulo me'al tzavarach." In other words, that you really are enslaved to Yavah. But kasher toyu means when you have a right to complain, as I was saying, which means because Yaakov is being his method and his way of living is the Tarakara, the Tarakta Lamasarecha means that you, Esav, in other words, will be governed. And it means that the Jew will be subordinate. It's an amazing thing. So you see that concept really goes all the way back to Lom Lom Yamas, to the Yitzchak by Rivka. Yes, apparently it's a But the question is, can you trace it any further? Somebody asked an interesting question. They said, why is it? Gemara says, anyone that calls Abraham is over in an asset. Why? Because it says over the Bible, it says, your name shouldn't be Avraham, it should be Abraham. Okay? So then the Gemara says, if that's the case, so what about Yaakov? Says the same thing, right? Where you call Yaakov for Yaakov, King Yisrael, right? So Chazal say no, because God said in the next, in the succeeding psukim, it says that Layomer, Shemini Yisrael, Maris Alaylo, and it says Layomer Yaakov Yaakov. So you see, God called him Yaakov even after he was called Yisrael, right? So okay, fine, it's very nice of the Gemara, very nice of the Gemara. But the question is, if you choose one of those two names, you say, okay, so you see, you don't listen to the phone after. But you notice the name that is most often used, really, is not Yisrael. It's really Yaakov. Okay, Avram, like a Yisrael, and Yaakov. And why should it be? Here's a question. Here's a question. And okay, so you say, there's no listen to the phone after. But why is Yaakov really the name? And you see, the name should really be Yisrael. Okay? Yeah. I think the reason is because there's a difference between Avram and Avram, and between Yaakov and Yaakov and Yisrael. See, Yaakov, the name of Yaakov, what was, Yaakov really had some problem in his personality. This I mentioned was the whole concept of the Malach, the struggle with the Malach. The struggle with a Malach was a struggle with a part of his nature, a certain part of his nature where he was subordinate. As a matter of fact, Chazal say that the Malach was the most common problem in that. There was a certain aspect of his personality that caused him to subordinate himself. That's what Yaakov means, subordination. But even in his subordination, even though he had that element in his personality, he used this toughness to work around it in order to be successful. He worked around love and honor, but he was never really, he didn't have the strength of character to be like a Melech, like a Yisrael, like a Sar. So when he struggled, the struggle with a Melech really, there was a struggle with that part of his personality. So like I said, he went back after the top of time. And he showed a certain, with the little pain that he left over, little things that he left over on the other side, he went back to get them. Because a person that is fearful, fears they need everything, they can't lose anything, it's a certain kind of mental framework. So he was in that mental framework, and he struggled with it, and then he emerged victorious, and he was really Yisrael. But that triumph, the triumph of Yaakov when he became Yisrael, was really what the Lord said and done. It was a great accomplishment, a great feat. But it was philosophical. It wasn't philosophical. Really, it goes back to what was there as well. What was there as the Rambam is the Eretz Beis really is psychological. A person is going to be able to control their energies, directly channel their energies in a proper way. But Eric Gimel is philosophical goal of the gift. Yaakov, in his early stage, on the contrary, it shows a greater commitment in the struggle for philosophical perfection because he had the psychological impediment. So the name of Yaakov is the one that remains. Because in Yaakov, you have an individual, in spite of the external situations, and in spite of his own personality, is able to keep one objective before his mind's eye, and that is the BSHR. And that's, he was successful. He was successful in that first, and then later he was successful insofar as the psychological triumph is concerned, to remove that element from his personality. Remove that element from his personality. But apparently that element was there. That element was there. And that's why a lot of that's what the question is, how clean are your people in Israel of Peter Nusha? I shall talk about how I am myself. Why do you really have wonderful story about Yaakov, how he was victorious over, that's the most difficult thing for a person to do, to be victorious over your own personality, aspects of your own personality, really change your character, and overcome a psychological weakness and a flaw, that requires tremendous strength of character and knowledge. Okay, there's a great feat. There's no doubt about it. But the fact is that nevertheless, the feat always is still only in a psychological, frame. Why is it, however, with Doros? Why is it? It's nice that you got the other, but why do we do it? Like we were looking at giving us out of Yamazera. Why out of Yamazera? That's the reason. The reason is because apparently that character rose up there. The Giranosha is something that reflects that concept. That struggle which Yaakov had with that part of his personality is a part of the personality of the Jew. That weakness. That's why Giranosha wasn't just an incident that took place with Yaakov Avinu. The Ramban says it reflects all the generations. Because that's really the key. The element of subordination is there. The only way that the Jew can escape that psychological problem is through fuckment of the knowledge. So that's why really I think that's what Rashi means in Parshas Vayikra. Rashi says that they began to sway the Jews the moment Yaakov Avinu died. What does it mean to say? We know there was no real enslavement of the Jews at that point, because Joseph was still the Shalit, he was still the ruler of the tribe. What it means is that the moment the personality of Yaakov vanished, and the moment the Shlemus HaAdam was gone, and Yaakov being the Shlemus HaAdam philosophically and also psychologically, the moment that was gone, then the Jews started to slip into that other kind of mentality. Now Chazal say that having to have the Shebit star, interesting. Chazal say this Torah is a word that you have to break down into two words. The Terach means to say, you just can't come over to the Jews. You're a very nice man. They spoke to them in a very pleasant way, and they induced them in a nice way to become slaves, to start doing things, to start taking on that character of a slave. It's an amazing thing. I mean, but they don't believe the inside of Chazal. That's exactly what Chazal was saying. That the Jew has that capacity. He has that capacity. And the moment he loses his chachma, both in terms of the GSHM is knowledge of those levels, and also Spachman so far as directing the energies of his own personality, the psychological Spachman, the moment he loses that, so he starts becoming an enemy. That's what I mean. It's an interesting thing. Yosef himself, personally, did not have that problem. But apparently the Akan did. Yosef himself he was the master of psychology, but the Yachin apparently started to slip after the cure of Yachin. You could see it really with Sukkot. You know what you see? You see it what did the Yachin do when they came after? Exactly, what did they say? The Yachin says, when they saw their father dying, maybe he'll hate us. Why should Yosef want us to follow us as a man also? They told him that, made up a story, that Yaakov told him, and then he says, "Vata son of Lefesha Avde Yolekei Avicha." Vayofi Damecha Vitu Chana Vayomu Hineni Locha La'avad. Vayofi says that. What do they say? Hineni Locha La'avad. So they prostrate themselves before Yosef, and they said, "We are slaves." Amazing thing. There you see, right there, there, you can understand why they were concerned. You had a right to be concerned. You know, look, you know, in your hadas, you have a special, there's a special kind of in the world, you have a social etiquette. In your hadas, we have a halachic etiquette, how you relate to people. We'll discuss a little bit later, but so you understand why Yosef and the brothers, as close as they were, certain things they didn't discuss. And this is one. But they had a legitimate right to be suspicious, and maybe he really harbors this resentment of all these years fine. But you notice the way they went about it, they went too far. You could sense, you know, reading the psukim, and then they said, sent something from the text, the psukim, it was too far. And then it was a lot other, but then another person. But there was the need of obvious. The need of obvious, that's a rationale, it's a pagami. And the moment Yaakov was mitzvah, that leader set in. And the moment that leader set in, if it sets in with regard to Yosef, then it's with regard, then you're open for the mitzvah of God. You can't be, if you're never for one person, you really never for everybody. No excuse being isolated. If you're never for one person, you're subordinated, then anybody can come along and make you a better. And that's what you see in the subject. It's an interesting thing. Yeah. I mean, this description aligns very well with what the Rav one time said about Ayin Hara. Where he said, Ayin Hara, how does Ayin Hara work? And the Rav explained that Ayin Hara works because it works on a person who is concerned about what other people think about him. If you're worried, like the Rav said, he said, may Rabban give it to Russia, and walk off to Russia, and walk up to Russia, and it may have been very good, but if people didn't like it, that's it, the day of shock. Why? Because what other people think is to them the barometer of the value of their statements. You see? Because that's Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara means that's why it doesn't say it's not Ayin Raw, it's Ayin Shel Hol Ra. The Ayin of a dead person, of dead people always try to fix it. You see somebody else who tells you, try to put them down. Ayin Shel Hol Ra is the eye of the dead person who wants to put down another person. And most people are subject to that kind of a thing. If people put you down, it's going to bother you. But Chazal say that Yosef lo shelta ba. The others, they sold them, and not just selling them, the emotional degradation, the fact that the physical isn't really so terrible. The emotion is more powerful. They show what they thought of it. He was able to survive. And he said, "Can I stand on the king as far as more than this could base of him?" Once he said, he forgot. He overcame all the. That's what the person means. It says he called some of the person Menashe. Why? He says, "The interesting thing, most people, if they would arrive at such a high position, they say, wow, I'm golfing, I have position, I have everything. No, yes, he said, he's going to stand on the king as far as more than this could base of him." Basically, the psychological is the most important. You could have all the success in the world, you'd be miserable. Because things bother you. And he says, now Shani and the King has fell on money, the Israel base of the news. God helped me overcome this psychological problems that I've had from the past. I've been sold by the brothers. He was able to overcome it. And even today we live without his father. So that's why he told his son and his son Menashe. He had this one to tell. This one was his son. He said, that's a shot. He said, usually was the care of our ex. So Chazal say in that process, usually was like dugging, like they're only assaulted by my and her. That's why Sinful thinks that Frank Hamanash means he should have that kind of a personality that doesn't bother you about it. And I and her shouldn't bother you. Good job. And he basically goes back to the Brisbane of Sharon. He says, Yadoa Teda. I'm always like you're a Shana. Because they say, Yadoa Teda. He gave you a Zarafa Baris Lolan, but what is he also? After the nation, the nation goes up. So it means to say that that's the idea that we're after the nation goes up. This brother means the whole, why is it after the nation goes up? It's true, it's after the nation, you can't just try to see that. And that's the important thing. The first brother is not so important, you don't have to look at it anymore. See that it's left. So why is it after the nation goes up? That's what the Rav mentioned once, the Rav said, the whole idea of the soul that Yishon is spent on the door as they saw was that a person that's a servant in a house would never have the nerve to go over to the mistress of the house and borrow her gown and wouldn't even think of doing such a thing. what the whole concept of Mitzrayim was, that their self-esteem was raised to the point where they consider themselves equal with the Mitzrayim, and that was the idea of the first double, was to undo the mentality of the others. That was the purpose of the refresh. Because in a person, what Chazal say? Chazal say that when the Torah went down, it says, that's called a Kuma Shobra Adrian. Funny expression. You couldn't mean something to suspend. And they went down in all that which caused the person to stand on his feet. So Chazal says, Yemma Mona Shalom. That's a person's money. Because a person is independent financially, it affects his personality. So Vachachin Yitzhak, the first double, means Vavodim Ge'inosim. They'll have the slave mentality, but Vachachin Yitzhak, the first double, means that one will be removed psychologically and eventually from that kind of mentality. And you see that the whole history of the artist really is grappling with that thought of the personality of the Jew. He's right. I mean, that was a small element of it was with Yosef. That's why he stayed for 2 more years, because he relied on the emotionally relied on the Saramashka. Right. Yes. Yeah, so that's what it means. That's what Moshe. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu perceived in Achim Nolan. That's what it means. Once he saw the way they reacted with the mitzvah, his perception into the situation was clear that they are avodim. Why? Because they want to be avodim. It's an element of opposite. And then he said, that's my work. It turns out that through the opposite is bad as it was, but ultimately was an instrument to bring them to Tacheres, to Kabbalah Sakara. I mean, but that's exactly the same thing we were saying. In other words, there's the personality of the only escape for the Jews, through fact. That's the only escape. Okay. Yeah. So Yaakov in Yisrael, so the name Yaakov always remains. On the contrary, because in Yaakov you have the struggle, the Yedias Hashem, in spite of the psychological defect. You see, in Yisrael you have Yisrael is an expression of his victory over his emotional weakness. A psychological victory, but Yaakov expresses on even to a greater degree the philosophical victory, because in spite of his weak emotions, his weakness in his psychological nature, he still was able to fulfill completely his strivings towards the Yedias Hashem. You see, so that's why Yaakov always remains. Yaakov is the main achievement, even though Yisrael certainly signifies a type of a comfort. But the Yedias Hashem and Yahadus is more important than Sagrada. Where Abraham was, why was his name Abraham? It was because of philosophical. That was a philosophical victory. That's why Abraham, you know, let it fall off him. Because then you've been arranged this philosophical victory. And Yaakov, on the contrary, there is something in Yaakov which is even a greater reflection of his perfection in terms of the Yedias Hashem than there is in this world. And Yisrael also has a type of view of the psychological, which is recognized. But the name Yaakov is the name of it. Yeah. That's right. That's exactly what Hashem is. That Yaakov is sort of like Keva Gumiya. He was always subordinated, but he was able to work around the situation. And later, after Yisrael, then he was as a Tsar. It's a different kind of personality. Personality change. Okay. Yeah, I mentioned for you, yes. Okay, I mentioned before, I said that we have a certain type of protocol, the way we, so a social etiquette that's based on halakha. So, I'd like to take up something about that in the Parshas Vayechi, actually. The Tegel Parshas Vayechi, it says that when Yaakov Avinu told Yosef he's about to die, and he asked him to bury him in the Mitzrayim, so there, in Eretz Yisrael, I'm sorry, ויאמר להם נפקא רבי סיכון שתת גלו מצד ישראל שזוס וזכר חפו זולם so it's like this ואני בבוי מפדון נסו עלי רוחל בארץ כנען בדרך ועוד כבס ארץ לבוא הפרוס like the rare השום בדרך איפה עשי בישלח so that's מנחס זי okay. So first he told them to make sure almost a grain of sugar then he says, then he told him about the Shvatim, and then he says, somehow or other, okay, he set up the Shvatim, fine, but then he has this last pasuk which doesn't seem to fit in. Ani b'vor yukadon meisolai rochel beretz kanan badera. So, what is it? So Chazal say, why? Because Rashi says, Rashi says, even though I'm being matiach on you to go to Eretz Kanaan, he says, but I didn't do this for your mother. Point to Rashi, she's buried in her Kitzlach. Now, I'm not going to say that, but anyway. But according to Rashi, Rachel, Kevin Rachel is a Kitzlach. Okay, so he says, I didn't do this for your mother. So he says, even though I'm asking you to do it for me, but I know that you harbor certain resentments. He says, Rashi says, that they are some, v'loho lachtio afilu lebeis lechem lachis alore, v'yadati shivish belibcho olah. I know that you, in your heart, you're holding this against me, you harbor certain resentments against me. Avol dalacha, you should know. It says because she should be an aid and assistance for her children when the Rizaradon in the first Golas, he caused them to go by Rachel's kever. And it says, and Rachel came out on her kever, she was crying and she was asking for Rachel for her children. Shenema, Kol, Pasuk Nia, Kol Beroma Mishma, Nihi Yevachis Amirim, Rachel Mavaka Al Bornea, Me'ana Le'inachim, Ki'enena. Pasuk says that Rachel cries for her children because they're very zealous. Interesting Pasuk in the New York. What exactly it means, and he tries in a little note. But, that's what the Pasuk says. And then God, says, so Rashi says, Ba'kadosh Baruch Hu Meshiva, means the Pasuk says, Yesh Shavu Pula Sechnum Ad Hashem V'Shevo Ban Yudin. So God says to Rachel that there's a lot of reward for your work, and your children will return eventually to Israel. Okay, so the question is, I mean, what is this dialogue, and what is the idea of Rachel Christ? And also the question, of course, is why didn't he tell him this all these years? He knew that his father was resentment against him because his mother died. He knew, obviously, Yosef knew where his mother was buried. So why didn't he tell him that before, right at this point? Yeah. So first let me explain what the whole idea of the what it means is like this. When it says, Rachel Mavaka Boneha, I mean, what that says, it's basically there, mush. Because, of course, it doesn't mean that her kever is over there, so that when they go by, that she hears them. I mean, of course, she's not alive. It doesn't make any difference how close or how far, I mean, they are. If you can hear them over there, you can hear them anyway. But what it means is like this. What it means is, interesting thing, what it means is, that you see the Kibre of us, the Maoris and the Hela, I mentioned before, the country, the Maoris and the Hela, is that Eretz Yisrael is nothing to us unless it's tied to certain protected individuals, like the Rambam and the Parashish. You have to have in mind, before your mind's own, certainly protected individuals, the others, the Maoris. Okay. But basically, Maoris and the Hela is an Eretz Yisrael. But you see, the Jews were not that long in Eretz Yisrael. They're longer than the Goths. So, but it means it like this. It means that when the Jews went by, they saw Kevah Rachel. So they thought about the life of Rachel. Rachel's life was very tragic life. I mean, she was, first of all, until she married Yaakov for 7 years. And then she couldn't even marry. They go to the Simon for Leah. And that's the most difficult thing for a woman to do. And then she didn't have any children. Leah had children. She didn't have any children. And to the point where she said she doesn't want to go on living anymore. Then she finally had a child. And then she had a second child. She's a young woman. And she died on the road. Her whole life was a tragic life. So what it means is that Yaakov didn't bury her right over there. Why? So when the Jews and Israel went by, and the first time like ever, so they realized, they thought about her life, and they thought that she really gave her life, her entire life, her own career purpose to demonic powers up. So this is something which is an instrument that causes an individual to be chozer b'tshuva. It's an instrument that causes Yahadus always employ certain methods to cause a person to, a person has b'chuva, to cause a person to exercise their b'chuva properly, to use a certain tool, certain instruments. This is a very powerful instrument. And a person realizes that an individual's existence was just for their sake in order to live a certain kind of a life. This changes their whole perception of the life. So the taivas are always rooted in the here and now. Taivas are hard to fight because they're in the here and now. But when the mind takes over, and a person gains a certain perspective, the world of taivas becomes very small. So the clever Rachel was really there. And that's when he's Rachel Mavaka up and out. That's what says, Yesh Shalit Pulasa. What does it mean, Yesh Shalit Pulasa? Because she didn't have any, her personal life was really tragic. She really didn't have any, nobody would want to live a life like that. So her whole life was for Chal Yisrael. So that's why it says, Yesh Shalit Pulasa, who shoveled one in the tree. It means that the really, the clever Rachel was right over there, right where the tragedy occurred. So that Chal Yisrael should be able to reflect on her life as a vehicle and an instrument of truth. Really, Kever Rachel is the Ma'oras HaMachpelah, that's Ma'oras. Really, two Ma'oras HaMachpelah. One is an Yisrael, and the Kever Rachel is the Ma'oras HaMachpelah, that's Ma'oras. Okay. Now, why didn't Yaakov Avinu tell Yosef the remove this thought from his mind? I mean, he knew that it was bothering him, after all, or his mother. Why did he get into that conflict? The answer like this. The answer is what I mentioned before, that when you have this, the conversation, the social interaction of people who live according to color is completely different than the normal social interaction. Other things that they interact based upon emotion, it's an emotional outlook. But in Yahadis, a person that's on a very high level, the way they interact is based on fact. Now, really, Yaakov was, of course, the Rebbe of Yosef. He was Rebbe, and he gave him over the Torah and Shem Eva. So, the Yaakov didn't have to explain himself. The Rav doesn't have to explain himself. Because sometimes he shouldn't explain himself. Because he's undermining his role as a Rav. So, Yaakov didn't have to give excuses. He didn't owe Yosef any apology. He was the Rav. And he knew that Yosef had the rights, but the halacha is, a Talmud is also a halacha rabbi. He's not allowed to be suspicious of his rabbi. Now he has to somehow rather say that he's a great individual and he knows what he's doing. It's none of my business. I have no right to think about this. So really for Yaakov to tell Yosef before would be interfering in his realm of Bechir. And in the social intercourse of a chachamim, they're very cautious not to interfere with the realm of the functional realm of another person's chachamim. The person has to deal with himself. Has a problem, he has to deal with the halacha. So he's bothering, so he has to take a little shit and say, Asul Hara Halacha. He has to overcome that emotion. It's something that's illogical. Since he's a great couple, it's not his business why he did this, why he did that. So Yaakov, up to that point, it would have been wrong for him to apologize to Yosef and to tell him why he did it. But later, when he wanted Yosef to accomplish his mission, which was to make sure that he's not buried in Mitzrayim, and he should become the Avodah Zarah, and make sure that he should be going to Canaan. So then he had to make sure that all psychological obstacles were removed from Yosef's mind. Over there, you can't rely on the other person's behavior. You can't rely on the whole life afterwards. then when you have to accomplish something, so then you must remove every kind of obstacle, even a psychological obstacle. So therefore, Yaakov, only at that point, told Yosef why he buried his mother on that spot, because it was like a keyboard with a specific purpose to keep it in work. Until that point, he didn't tell him, and it would have been wrong if he would have told him. Now the point I'm making is that that same trait is has to do with the ability to sublimate energy into the form of a superego. And that superego could either be other people, or else it could be an abstract superego of the profile of the tzaddik. So, but the need to satisfy that part of the human mind the Jew has. Because the Jew is the most sublimated people in the world, the Jews. I mean, the Jew is the most sublimated in the world.
I just wanted to add one thing, so that is that I mentioned Yaakov really is philosophical perfection, and Yisrael is psychological perfection. And the reason why the Torah doesn't refer to him as Yisrael, he also for Avram and for Yisrael and for Yaakov, is because of the fact that if it would do that, the implication would be that psychological perfection is in essence. Great psychologist, you know, the need of objects that he described. He never had that. He was a great psychologist. He was perfected as far as psychology is concerned. Okay? That's that part takes of the perfection of his world. A Yahadus recognizes that perfection, but the essence is philosophical. That is the difference. See, for the psychologist, the whole realm of reality is simply the psyche. There's nothing deeper than the psyche. That's why I mentioned this. Somebody yesterday said, somebody one time mentioned, an old cousin of myself, he said that about the Freudian slips. He said, the Freudian slip is really a way of knowing the individual. So why not? Because I'll mention this. I don't have such a thing. But the answer is very simple, because a Freudian slip is only a revelation of a certain unconscious trend. But in Yahadus, that's only the outer shell of the personality. The perfection is really philosophical. Philosophical means that the Chazal say So it means to say that for the perfected individual, the psyche is not the essence. The psyche is just the human being has no conscience, but that's not the end of the sum total of the human being. For the psychologist, that is the sum total, because there is no philosophical individual. There's no philosophical soul. There is just a psyche, because all he's interested in is the world in which he can live psychologically happy. That's all the psychologist is interested in. That's the end of his world. And that's why you see it in today's world. In today's society, today's a society of therapy. Endless therapy. That's the... But what is the whole concept of therapy? That's what that doesn't matter. But besides that, the statistics show that any kind of therapy that you take makes no difference. You have the same success rate. Which is basically that the whole therapy today boils down to having a friend somebody to talk to. But at any rate, I'm not getting into that. But my point is this. My point is that is today's society is simply a preoccupation with the psychological happiness, what they consider psychological happiness. Okay, that's the preoccupation of the human being. That's basically a self-indulgence to an endless degree where there is no involvement in anything more important than yourself. I mean, this is the world of psychology. This is not the world of the others. The others maintain that the that is a factor, but it's not a, it's a factor like Goof. I mean, wasn't that wrong? What's wrong is very exact. I mean, what's his case? The first when he speaks about the Migos, he says, she is showing the Goofa. I was going to say, showing the Goofa? Showing the Goofa means it's a psychological perfection. Not the soul, it's not the perfection of the soul. Okay, so we see Yahadus revolves around essentially the perfection of the soul, which is that's the essential realm of Yahadus. It's a reality that a person has to be involved in, and that's the whole Yahadus. Yisrael is very nice, I mean, it's necessary, but it's not the essence of human perfection, okay? Yeah, I want to get that. The name Yisrael is the name Yisrael. Because that is a characteristic of the Ummah. The characteristic of the Ummah is that the Ummah is not It's Malchus. It's Malchus. It's Kohina. It's Tsar. That is the trait of Kali Yisrael. In the Umar, in the Klal, in the Umar, the Umar can have this, the perfection of the Nechna to other people, the need of others. The whole concept of Yitzhak Mitzrayim is to create a nation that's Malchus Kohanim V'Gei Kodesh. That's Yisrael. That's where we are. That's what's going to be. When we're speaking about the individual, in other words, Yaakov as an individual, then it's Yaakov. It's not Yisrael. That's what we're doing. Yes. And that's the way. And the plan didn't work. But the reason why the plan didn't work was because we didn't necessarily have a clear problem. That's the whole concept of Yaakov level. Not just a concept, but a challenge. That's level what the Umar Israelis was meant to be. That's the concept of it. That's why they never talk about Lassie level. Not because looking forward to certain good things. It means to say that it's the concept of the Umar Israelis, which involves the perfection of the element of Yisrael. That's why Yisrael is the name used for me. As an Umar without Yisrael, it cannot exist. It cannot exist as that. Good. As an Umar, you're speaking about a political sovereign entity. It must be Yisrael. It cannot be that. Then it's not existing in its essential way. Yochid could exist as Yaakov and be very perfected. But the concept of Rome as a political entity, a sovereignty, I mean, you can't have that without Yisrael. That's why it's always Rome and Yisrael. It has to be that. Okay. And the Pasuk Patonki, Nikola Hasad, Nikola Anas, Yashisa, Vardecha, puts me very well. And the framework of Yaakov. There's a problem in Yahadis, and the problem is that since Yahadis is true, and since HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave man a Tzelem HaLakim with which you can uncover certain truths, you can uncover ideas and truths, what happens is, during the course of history, certain individuals make certain discoveries. Now, the Hamon Am, or oftentimes, is not on the level to really understand what that is, and certain people, the names become tainted because of the fact that the world associates and identifies them with a certain idea which in their mind is negative. And you see, a chacham doesn't have any problem with the world of ideas, but a chacham distinguishes. I mean, the name Das of Dominai. But the world is incapable of things. That's why the Rambam writes in the Dona, but it's not a chacham. Says that many things that I'm saying here, I should say this in my mouth, but the fact is that people, I mention certain names and people are going to frown upon them, and they're going to look down upon them. That's the problem he has. So everybody says, not to mention it, but Shema HaEmes Mimi Shaham. Okay, Mimi Shaham. So, I want to make it clear that if I mention your name or mention your Freud, I mean, Yahadis does not carte blanche endorse Freud. I mean, certain discoveries that he made are correct, but Yahadis are correct. But you have to be aware of the fact, and let's say the Rambam omitted names, because names, people are constantly picking them in the it's a big problem because since that's the case, you mention the name of somebody, so immediately has a negative reaction, or sometimes a bad positive reaction. Either way, okay. I just want to. That's what Ram says. Shema Amos Mishamah. Okay. But I mean, it's a problem. I mean, it's not a problem when you're dealing with people that understand, that have knowledge, but it is a problem when you're dealing with a world. And he says, oh, Chachamim Zohar B'Gedrash. The Devar Ashkenazi asks a question. So is there a root? Is it a direct root from philosophical perfection to psychological? The answer is yes. So Yaakov Avinu wasn't accidental that he arrived at psychological, but you see it was later at psychological perfection, because there's no question about it that philosophical perfection will eventually bring a person to psychological perfection as well. That's good. But vice versa doesn't work necessarily. Doesn't work. It can't work. I mean, it doesn't work. It's not intrinsic. It's not intrinsic, because if your value system is simply the emotional life, that's your value system, you're not going to get beyond that without the philosophical knowledge. You're stuck there. But the other way, you're right. Philosophical perfection teaches a person to inquire into himself constantly, and then he notices certain flaws, and then he could perfect himself psychologically as well. It is a direct route. It's not Yisroel, where you see it's an interesting thing, though. By Yaakov Avinu, the psychological perfection came last.